That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hi there, and welcome to Grief is My Superpower. I'm Mark Lemon, award-winning children's author, bereavement ambassador, and your host for this podcast. Each week, I'll be interviewing incredible people that get open and honest about their own experience with grief. When I was 12 years old, my dad was murdered, and my life changed forever. I try to explore with my guests if it's possible to live a happy and fulfilled life after the death of a loved one. You can find me as The Dad Author on Instagram and at the Lemon Drop Books website. For this episode, I've travelled to London to speak with co-founder of My First Years, Dan Price. Dan is husband to Hannah Beth and father to his baby boy, Alba. Dan speaks to me about the death of his dad and how it's inspired him to succeed in life. You can find Dan at the My First Years website. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast. By doing this, it will help us to reach more people in need of support at a tough time. This podcast is in support of children's bereavement charity, Winston's Wish. Okay, so today I have travelled to London and I am meeting someone who is a very special guy. I discovered him through actually an article through the Daily Mail to do with grief and bereavement, and it's Dan Price. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks so much for being a part of this today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for the listeners, I'm not sure if you could tell them a bit about yourself and who you are.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm Daniel Price. I'm 32 years old. I actually founded a company called My First Years around 8 years ago. And I guess why I'm obviously here speaking with you is, unfortunately, I lost my father when I was 13 years old. And that's kind of given me the drive in life to set up the business. Extremely motivated. And I've just had an amazing addition to our family this year. Baby boy called Alba, who's 6 months old. And been married 2 years.
Amazing. So, yeah, in terms of, obviously, you've kind of introduced yourself in terms of the grief element of that. And with your dad, and we've got quite a lot in common in terms of, you know, my dad died when I was 12, your dad died when you were 13, you know, in sort of really important times in your life. Are you able to tell the listeners a little bit more about, you know, maybe when your dad died and how you found that and how it affected you?
Yeah, sure. So, so my dad died, as I said, when I was 13. And he, growing up, I remember he had a couple of back operations and doctors identified a mole on his body. So he actually got diagnosed initially with a form of melanoma. It was in the 90s. And then I was 8 or 9 years old when it first came out. And then he was told not to go in the sun. And unfortunately, it was at a time when sunbeds weren't publicized to be horrific for you. And being slightly on the vain side, I guess, like, he was going on a couple of sunbeds a week or every couple of weeks, which was obviously extremely dangerous. And then in 1998, it came back when I was 11 years old, the skin cancer came back and it was like malignant melanoma at the time. And all I remember is hearing my mum and dad talking about scans, and I just thought, I remember must have seen it on a TV program or a film, and I just associated scans to cancer and thought the worst. And then it was a couple of really tough years, yeah, until the ultimate day.
Do you remember when you first found out clearly? Do you know, is that something that's really stuck in your mind?
Yeah. I think the two occasions that stand out the clearest for me are, firstly, when my parents had recently split up. They split up when I was 11, but my dad was over for dinner, and I remember him talking to my mum. I was at the top of the stairs, probably hiding actually and listening. They were talking about these scans and that he thinks he's got cancer, and I just remember that really, really vividly. And then the second thing I really, really remember is then coming home from school one day. It was a Friday, and I just saw the look of my mum's face, and I just said, this was like 2 years later, and I just said, look, just what is it? It's Dad, isn't it? And she kind of said to my sister, Natasha, and I, come inside. So we did, we sat down, and she then delivered the news that the doctor said that they think there's 3 days left, and, you know, for my dad to be around. And that was obviously the toughest thing that you could ever hear.
So they gave you 3 days until he passed away?
Yeah, I think at that point we had a real choice to make, because we'd seen him about 10 days prior when he was still looking like himself. And what we had heard is over the 10 days, and the reason we hadn't seen him is because he'd gone like a lot very scrawny, and he just wasn't looking himself at all. So I spoke to the doctors, spoke to a friend of his, and we had a tough choice whether to go and see him when there was less than 72 hours to go, and when all we thought of was in the future, we want to remember him for all the good times. Right. So that was a really tough choice.
That is such a hard choice to make, isn't it? You know, did you decide not to see him?
Yeah. I said to Tash, my sister, I said, look, we want to remember good times for the future. I said, I promise you, if we go now and see him, it's just going to make this 10 times worse. And we shouldn't go and see him, basically. So we didn't. And it was the best decision, because we've got so many good memories. And the sad thing is, I remember calling him up. We phoned him up, phoned the hospital up, got through to his room, speaking to him for, you know, 5 minutes. He asked me what the Man U score was, because he's a big Man U fan. We hadn't even played that day. I just said we won 3-0. And he spoke to my mum, and he asked my mum if we needed the room number to get through to his room. And she said, we're on the phone now, like we've got the number. And I think then we realized that actually he was starting to wither away, and not only physically, but also like mentally. And so I feel like we made the right choice.
I mean, it's pretty special you got to actually talk to him over the phone, wasn't it, in the end? And it's quite an adult decision that you guys had to make, isn't it? You know, because normally the parent would be making that decision, like, come on, I think it's important you go and see, you know, your parent, your father. So, yeah, I mean, and at the age of 13, it was quite huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think, obviously, our mum helped us a lot with the decision. She also agreed with it. But, yeah, it was a big decision, but the right one.
Wow, yeah, that's... And, you know, like we talked about before, you know, in terms of the variances of grief that everybody goes through, you know, everyone's is individual and different, and, you know, my circumstance was different to yours. But the impact of grief at that sort of age, you know, you were in secondary school, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And so was I. How did you cope and deal with your grief in secondary school?
Yeah, so I think both Tash and I, we took 2 weeks off from what I remember, I think. And I must admit, it was obviously horrific. It was the worst feeling we've ever felt. And it was then kind of, I knew I was having to be the man of the house. But when it was linked to school, the support we had firstly, the teachers was amazing. But the people that I'd always just about, you know, said hello to in the school playground, they were almost, it was overwhelming. Like, they were sending me messages, and, you know, I remember the best part of a horrific situation was getting text message from one of the girls in the year above that I'd never spoken to. And I always thought, oh, that, you know, she's nice. And we, you know, I got text message saying, it's obviously really sorry to hear, you know, et cetera. But the support was amazing. But you just felt like very popular and very welcomed, and everyone was there for us, which was so important.
Yeah, I remember that so clearly as well. Just being quite different in a sense, you know, when you've lost a parent at that sort of age, you know, not a lot of children would have. So yeah, that kind of sense of feeling a little bit different. And when you go back to school, it's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really strange. Everyone deals with it in different ways. I think we both made like conscious effort not to bottle things up, because we felt we would have taken it out on people and our aggression and, you know, why us? Why has this happened to us? And I think we, from that moment, we realized that we've got to be positive about this for the future, even though we were so young. So it's crazy to think that at 13 and then my sister being 11, that we both decided together to make something good of our lives from this terrible situation.
Do you think that was a conscious effort, you know, in terms of, because I remember thinking a similar way, and I still do to this day, and it probably leads us quite nicely onto the fact of, you know, and reading your article in the Daily Mail and obviously hearing your story more there, and this podcast is called Grief is My Superpower, because I believe that you can take positives out of a really terrible situation, which you guys obviously have done. But then you've gone on to achieve what you're doing now. Do you think that has given you and inspired you to go on and succeed?
Yeah, for definite. Growing up, my dad always wanted to better himself in his career. And I think he was unlucky. He always had ideas. So he's always be coming up with different things. And I saw that entrepreneurial flair in him. And I think it got to the point where a couple of things almost came off and they didn't. And then when he passed away, I just remember clearly thinking that I am the man of the house now. I've got to not only do my mum proud, who's been incredible for us and was through the years and still is, but also to look after my family. And I think that drive of something like that happening at such a young age or at any age has really driven me in every way. And so nothing is a no for me in life. I'm going to succeed, and the exciting bit is the how. My grandparents, who were like second parents to us, they thought I was crazy when I told them the idea about my first years before we launched. And I just said, look, I'm going to do this for the family. I'm going to become a success. And the how is like the Aladdin's magic carpet ride, as I refer to it. And I think like that is because I felt the worst feeling in life, and nothing could be worse than that. Exactly. Yeah. So you're so driven to just go through any hurdle or obstacle that you come across to overcome it and just make a success of yourself.
I completely relate to that. And any listener who is young, who is going through loss at the moment, you know, that is a really powerful message, isn't it? You know, that through this terrible time, you can go on to succeed and use it as, you know, as good. And talking about coping techniques in terms of the way that you've approached your grief, you know, did you ever find yourself using any coping techniques after your dad's loss?
My sister and I think we went a couple of times to see a therapist just to have that initial discussion, and I think that was about it. And then in terms of like how I coped with it from an early age, I just remember thinking that this has got to get better in time. And I think that's what one of the things I've learned growing up and now is that no matter what situation, whether it's bereavement or anything bad that happens, the only thing that can help is time. And that's the key. So it's just, unfortunately, it's a bit of a waiting game, but you come out the other side. And I think I always knew that I would come out the other side to a place where I would be at one stage, I'd be happier than I was before it happened. But because I'd learned to deal with it, and I progress my life so much more.
Yeah, that's quite an important point, isn't it? I mean, talking about time, and you know, I kind of used to think time as a healer as well, and I totally agree with you. You sort of build your grief around the time as well, don't you, in terms of just living with it, in
yes,
a sense.
Yeah, coping as well. Another thing you do is, well, not everyone does, but I think it's important to talk, and not necessarily talking about it every day. But this, first of all, always applying, you know, what would my dad have done in this situation? And yeah, making you feel good that you've kind of almost, I know you haven't made a joint decision, but you almost feel like you have. And then talking about it, like, so bottling it up, I feel can be the worst thing, because then you build up this anger and aggression and you take it out in different ways, whether that's losing sleep, whether it's being argumentative, whatever it is. And I think just talking really helps, and having a good old cry every now and again.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's another important one, isn't it? It's just feeling free to just open up and cry. You know, it's okay to feel sad, you know, all of these things, which in terms of the UK, sometimes there is that stigma and taboo that can be around grief that, God, we can't talk to them because we might, you know, upset them or say something. But in my opinion, that person has felt the lowest they're ever going to be. And so they kind of want to talk about their grief in a sense.
Yeah, I think so. I just think when, totally agree. I think when someone hasn't experienced that, they just feel so bad for either bringing up or even partaking in the conversation that often you get a, someone will say, I'm really sorry. And I guess when you've dealt with a loss like that, I'm not sure if same for you, but I always, I almost make a joke out of a lot of situations, and that's how I get through things. So when someone says sorry, my immediate response, or normally what I think in my head, is, why are you sorry? You didn't kill him. But almost makes it slightly awkward.
It can be a difficult one for anyone that's, you know, trying to help someone through that difficult period. I mean, in terms of schools and the way that we can approach grief, you know, obviously back when we were young, things were a little bit different. What do you think schools might be able to do a little bit different? I mean, it sounds like you were really well supported. And to be fair, I was helped a lot through my loss as well. Do you think it's just giving children a bit of space to be able to talk about how they're feeling and feeling open enough in the right space at school to open up?
Yeah, I think I remember everyone was amazing at the beginning. And then it was, they're back at school now and they kind of, they just wanted to treat us as normal as possible. I feel like having, especially the first 3 to 6 months, having like a once a week or even once every couple of weeks, just chat with someone at the school, for example, whether it's the head of year or whoever it is, someone that's going to make you feel a bit special, but also like they're kind of like your, I guess the equivalent of a buddy, like a mentor, someone that's there for you to steer you through some bad places you could go to if you didn't have that FaceTime with someone.
Yeah. And also, I mean, one thing that I've spoken about with previous guests where their parents have died from cancer, and they found that they grieved when they found out about the initial news that they had the cancer. And then also there was the after effect. Did you find that with your dad? Or because you found out a little bit later, maybe you didn't have that experience?
Yeah, I think, so seeing other people that I know that have lost someone, I think nowadays, looking at it, it's, I think, the toughest thing and where people get the most emotion from is the initial blow. So by the time it does come to the really, obviously, a horrible situation, they are more at peace with it, unless it's obviously a instant death or, you know. For me, I was so young that I didn't understand the initial blow. I didn't understand what that was. I just thought, okay, yeah, of course you link it to death. But I thought, there's no way that he's not going to be around for all these big future milestones coming up. It's just going to be okay. So for us, it was the blow was actually, you know, having the reality hit home, which was he's not coming back. And I think that for us, for Tash and I, was the hardest part.
That was the biggest blow to you.
Yeah.
And I guess also that kind of leads on to, you know, those special events throughout the year. And now we've talked a little bit earlier. Father's Day is this Sunday. For anyone, this will be released after Father's Day. But it's quite an emotive topic, isn't it? Specifically for you and I, obviously. But over the last 6 months, you're now a dad yourself. So how do you view Father's Day now, do you think?
Yeah, so I've been dreading the date, I guess, every year for 18 years now, and always wanted to get to a place where I was really looking forward to it. And obviously that was going to be when I had kids. Yeah, 6 months ago we had our first baby boy, Alba, and I'm absolutely buzzing for Sunday because it's been a day that I've dreaded for so long. And look, it's bittersweet, but I think this Sunday is the first year where I could actually say, oh, of course, I always think about my dad on that day, probably watch a few videos, but also really enjoy the day with Alba. And I've got to also bring him up on that day talking about his Papa Gary and what he was like and kind of looking up to the clouds, telling him some good stories. Obviously at 6 months he's not going to have a clue what I'm talking about, but he eventually will. But I'm actually really looking forward to it.
I remember that initial feeling of holding Otis in my arms for the first time, becoming a dad for the first time. Such an emotional feeling for me because of, like you said, that heartache, you know, throughout all of these years and then leading up to that moment of becoming a dad myself. Like, it's such a special feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the best. It really is. And it's also, look, it's obviously upsetting because he's obviously never going to meet my dad, but it's the best feeling now, and you want to just do everything you can for them. But yeah, no, I think another thing is you receive all the emails every year, don't you? Like last minute, last opportunity for Father's Day, or where are you taking your dad this year, have 20% off this theme park or whatever it is. And I always used to hate getting those emails and used to think how, you know, insensitive companies could be sometimes because who's on their database, they have no idea what's happened, who they've lost. And I think this year I'm receiving all these emails and I'm actually smiling and thinking, God, I hope Hannah Beth has sorted out some nice presents for me this Sunday.
Hope she's got that memo.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, that's lovely. And a really lovely way to sort of end that sort of section, I guess. One thing that I've introduced for this particular section of the podcast is I have some questions from the children at Winston's Wish. I'm just going to run through a few of these, and if you wouldn't mind answering some. So the first one is, how do you make yourself feel happy when you are feeling sad?
I think about my dad, good times, good memories that we had. And I just think how at every stage, I guess I've always felt like this, that how proud he would be. And that then always brings a smile back to my face. No matter what the situation is, also, I always think, how bad could it be? Like I've experienced the worst, so get over it and think about good things and be happy.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Next one is, what piece of music reminds you of your dad?
So Dave Brubeck, Take Five, which is, for those of you that don't know, it's a jazz piece, but amazing music. And Van Morrison, he was a huge Van Morrison fan. In fact, Van Morrison's probably the most frequent musician I think of, because I remember turning up to, we went to Brighton to see him live. I went with my dad, and my dad was so upset with Van Morrison that he hadn't sang a few of the songs on his album that he went up to the stage and started shouting at him. So that's who I think of.
Got him to rearrange his set list.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and lastly, what do you do to remember your dad on important days, like their birthdays, etc.?
So I will typically go out with my mum and sister on his birthday. So August the 7th every year, we have a big celebration where we go out for dinner, usually have a bit of a cry, which is really, really important. However strong someone thinks they are, you're stronger if you cry and if you can show people that. We talk about good times and bad times when he was around, like both. Talk about funny moments. And just remembering. And I think, okay, so the number one thing I guess I've done, or one of my proudest achievements, which is linked to that question, is it would have been my dad's 60th birthday last year. I can't remember if I've actually told you the story, but so it would have been my dad's 60th. And because my sister lives abroad, I told her to be in London at this particular date. And I told her not to ask why. And what happened was, I really wanted to celebrate his 60th in style. So going back 20, 25 years, we used to go to Disneyland, or we went a few times, and it was such a special place to us, the four of us in our family. And then when my dad passed away, my mum took Tash and I to Disney a few times, and it was the most epic special place for us. So I told them when I was 13, just after he died, my mum took us there. I said, when I'm 30, I'm going to bring you both back here, and we're going to stay at the hotel that we always look at when we go past on the boat, when we've come from our basic hotel. And it was last year that I was lucky enough that I was able to do this, saved up a lot of money and went to, we went to Disney in Orlando. So I got my sister over, turned up at my mum's apartment at 5 a.m. and she had no idea that I was turning up at all. And I just said, wake up, nothing's happened, don't worry, let us in. And we went in and we said, you need to pack a bag. She had no idea that my sister had come back either. So there was so many surprises. We turned up to the airport and she was crying already by seeing my sister. But I said, I'd branded everything because my dad's name was Gary. So I branded everything GP60 from caps to hoodies and bags. And we were all wearing it. And I just said, look, you've been an incredible mum to us over the years. And we're going to celebrate dad's 60th in style. So we spent a week in Orlando. And that was kind of the number one celebration for us today.
That's amazing. And that's really special memory for your mum as well, isn't it? And your sister.
Yeah, exactly. It so happened it was my mum's birthday over that week as well, which was even more special. Yeah. So a long-winded answer, but an important one to actually to say, like, yeah, do something. It doesn't have to be that extreme, but do something every year to celebrate.
That's it. How big or small, it doesn't matter, as long as they're remembered, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah. So one last question, and one that I always end my my interview on, is if you had a moment to sit down with your dad for one last time, have you got anything that you would like to ask him or talk to him about?
That is a interesting question. I think I'd probably like to ask him what his thoughts have been over the last nearly 20 years about how I and, you know, how my sister, how we've handled life at the different milestones, at difficult points, at crossroads, tough decisions, how he's felt we've handled ourselves and almost represented the family. And any kind of advice or anything he would do to change how we are as people. I think for me, that would be amazing to understand and to know, because I always wonder what would dad think, or, you know, yeah. And I guess a quick recap over the 20 years in a short meeting, I guess, would be an amazing thing to have.
Yeah, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And obviously, unfortunately, however good technology is these days, that's pretty unlikely probably to happen, but it's something nice to think about.
No, I think it's something nice to think about. So, you know, I always think through about myself and what I would say to my dad if I had one last conversation, and I think that's brilliant. So, Dan, thank you so much for taking your time out to talk with me and, you know, giving us your outlook on grief for our listeners mainly, you know, for young people out there that are listening to your inspiring story and how far you've come in so many years after the loss of your dad. So thank you so much.
That's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.